listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
I'm going to have to go.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, this is Michael Sterling.
And this is Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Art.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. We're delighted to be here. Michael, how was
indeed,
your fourth?
Indeed. You know what, Paul? It was full of work, but it was full of fun as well.
Yeah.
And we live in Studio City here in the beautiful San Fernando Valley, and our home it has a perfect view of all of the fireworks of CBS Studios.
Oh, okay.
Which is quite a show. Did you see that at all?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry, Michael. Before you tell your story, let's tell them who we have this hour. We have, go right ahead. You know better than I.
We were saying earlier, Paul, to one another, we've had such an amazing string of good luck since our premiere broadcast on May 31st with just a parade of beautiful women, and one of them is here with us today, Eileen Graff, Broadway star, television star, Grammy nominee. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's
absolutely
a pleasure.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the point that Eileen knows this about Studio City, because she's also a resident in that area, and CBS Studios does a spectacular, you know, fireworks display every year.
Okay.
And I thought it was pretty amazing last night. If you were at a party, I think you were. Yes.
Last night, this is the first year in many years that we didn't watch the Studio City fireworks from the balcony of our house. We were in Pacific Palisades at my cousin's, and boy, did they put on a show.
Oh, did they?
The fireworks display was probably the best I've ever seen live. I mean, nothing compares to what you watch from Boston.
The
town of Pacific Palisades.
Oh, man.
No, not my cousin. My cousin Stephen was not setting off the most amazing fireworks.
I was going to say, that would be pretty spectacular.
I mean, he does pretty well. He is a defense attorney, and he's, you know, he's got a couple of bucks, but not like the city of Pacific Palisades.
Well, it was a joy to watch it last night. You know, all of our neighbors come with their little lawn chairs, and they park in front of our house, and they watch this big fireworks display. But I will tell you, for me, the 4th of July started actually on Friday as I watched the annual celebration, the July 4th celebration at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. Did you happen to see that?
It's all on the DVR.
It's all on the DVR.
It's waiting.
Don't ruin the ending, Michael.
I will not.
The only thing I heard that Lincoln died.
Oh, no.
That's true.
Great.
Yeah.
At the theater, of all places.
What this year brought, talent-wise, to President and Mrs.
Who knew we'd have
Obama.
A Lincoln joke, though? I got to tell you. Who knew on July 5th we'd have a Lincoln joke? And a funny Lincoln joke.
Bada-bing. No, but the lineup of talent this year was, you know, wonderful as always, and the President and the First Lady sitting there, and Colin Powell and everybody else in politics was in the front row. And Dick Van Dyke was on, and George Lopez was on, and some wonderful, United States choral group. And the show was opened by one Kelly Clarkson, who I am a big fan of, Kelly Clarkson, the first American Idol winner, in 2002. But Kelly, unfortunately, she's changed. She's changed physically, and I felt what she sang was a little inappropriate for this show. Not that it was offensive. I don't mean that. I mean, everything was very kind of, you know, Americana, and the cast of Mary Poppins was on, and she sang something off of one of her albums, a pop tune that I've never heard before, but I'm sure millions
could
of people...
Could you manage to say pop tune with more contempt, Michael? Could you infuse pop tune? Anything it's not a show tune.
Yeah, No.
She sang a... pop tune.
No, in all due respect, I think she's an amazing talent. My issue is not with her talent or even the number that she sang, right? It is with the fact that she came on that stage looking like a cross between a white Aretha Franklin and Mae West and a drag queen all on a bad day.
Whoa! Oh. But how do you really feel about that?
Well, exactly, Eileen. This is the thing. I think whoever...
It's always about the clothes with you, isn't it?
It is the clothes.
It's always about the clothes.
You know why? Because women have the option to look amazing or not. And on this special, it was an or not situation for her. She had a dress on, that if you she could have sat around the stage in this dress, she would have sat around the stage.
Now,
how did she sound? How
she
was her voice?
Okay,
how did she sound?
But it was okay.
But were you distracted from her performance by what you were looking
yes,
at?
Yes, because
well,
it was so overwhelming, truly uh-huh. overwhelming. And also add to that the fact that this blonde, stringy, split-end hair with a part down the middle and black roots in front of the President of the United States. I didn't get it.
You've never had a teenage daughter, have
no.
you?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, but here's
is that it? Is that my
okay.
problem?
Well, you know, you learn how to pick your battles. and you don't ever go after the hair.
You don't have to go after the roots. But I will say, because I'm not as, you know, fixated on fashion as you are.
It's not that I'm fixated.
Then again, you know, no, you're not. But,
no, I love women. I think they're beautiful. I was stunned by this appearance.
Even with the whole, you know, teenage daughter factor, if you're going to perform in front of a president, touch up the roots. You know, touch up the roots if you're going to perform in front of the president. I mean, that's not asking a lot, do you think?
Well, it's a look, though.
That's true. It's a style.
You know,
right.
if I don't touch up my roots, it's inappropriate. But if a pop star doesn't touch up her roots, it's a look. You know, I was watching an Oprah rerun, I guess it was today. I don't know. And Jessica Simpson was on. Now, if there's anybody in the world that can afford to do whatever she wants, it's Jessica Simpson. And her hairdresser was in the audience with obvious, really dark roots. And so you say, this is a choice. This is a look that's popular now. It's not how we grew up thinking you look pretty, but she's not trying to look pretty for us.
Right. And we also didn't grow up with our pants around, you know, the low, you know,
right.
so low.
You know,
yeah,
so
right. that look.
Oh,
that
and
look.
You know what? I think we have a call, and I believe I know who this is because we have another guest today. I'm going to see if this is our call-in guest today, Miss Sally Struthers. Have you joined us here at LA Talk Radio?
Yes, this is the call for Sally Struthers.
Sally, you've changed. You've changed.
We don't have Sally yet on the line.
Okay.
And who do we have on the line? Who is this?
This is Taylor speaking, the assistant stage manager.
Taylor speaking. That's an unusual last name, Taylor.
Hey, Taylor, thank you so much for doing the legwork for us and wrangling Sally, if you would. We appreciate it.
We're just going to talk amongst ourselves here until we hear you announce her. How about that?
Okay, that sounds good.
Good, wonderful. Thank you. So, Paul, let me ask you, how was your 4th of July?
What did you do? My 4th of July was fine. We took the motorcycle around. It was a good day to, you know, go down to the ocean and ride it around. And, you know, I can't really pull off the biker thing.
You don't look like the only biker,
because I'm a metrosexual. So even though I have my wife on the back, I also have a lint brush and static guard in the saddlebag.
And we're not kidding.
Right? No, I'm not
this
kidding.
I'm not kidding. And he's got the most adorable wife. She's about 3 foot. 10.
No.
And,
what is,
I'm so sorry, Monica. What are you?
I make her sound like an Oompa Loompa. She's a lovely woman. She's five glorious feet tall.
There you go. How nicely said.
Yes. Oh, and you know what? I think we might have...
We have Sally.
Okay.
Wow. We are thrilled.
Let's.
Okay, I'm going to put her on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Hello, Sally. This is Paul Strohle and Michael Sterling from LA Talk Radio. You are on the air. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We're delighted to have
Paul.
You.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
Fine. Say hi, Michael.
Hello, Sally. How are you?
I'm fine. You're hiding, aren't you?
Oh, no. I'm not. We're just trying to take it all in. You know, I'm so thrilled to be speaking with you. You're working with my dear friend Lewis Welkenfeld out there, and you also worked many times with my dear friend David Galligan. So we've never had the pleasure of actually you and I working together like this, but we've met in the past. So
I just was out with David Galligan a few nights ago for his birthday.
Oh, my gosh.
Sally, I also want to say that we have Eileen Graff here with us in studio.
Yes.
I love Eileen Graff.
I love Sally Struthers. How are you?
I'm fine. I just did a benefit with Eileen.
Yeah, we did. We did a fantastic benefit for David Galligan for stage. And, Sally did a big section from this Patsy Cline show that she does. And
which
literally
is so marvelous.
Had us all in tears. It was absolutely brilliant.
That's always Patsy
that's
Cline, right?
Graph.
You're welcome.
that's a fun one to always, you know, air out and put back on its feet. It's such a lovely show. But I'm doing for the first time Cinderella now. I'm in rehearsal.
That's what we are here for. We want to talk about that and talk about everything. Tell us about Cinderella. Today's your first day of rehearsal, am I correct?
Yeah, my first day of
your
rehearsal.
First day,
I've
right.
already been rehearsing a few weeks, but I just joined them today. And the musical director, Stephen Smith, said, boy, you know, once you've got this down, you can do this show for the next 30 years. And I said, well, at the senior living situation where I'll be doing it, I get to play Cinderella.
And you're the, if I remember, you're the fairy godmother in this, yes?
Yes, I am.
Oh. And
my darling friend, Marcia Wallace, who I've been friends with for 40 years, is the wicked stepmother. Which
oh,
is fabulous.
We love Marcia Wallace. We're going to have her on, aren't we?
We are. You and me both, Sally. I'm an old friend of Marcia's, and she's going to join us a little bit later in the month here, because we want to give Cinderella and Cabrillo Music Theater as much promotion as we possibly can. We think the world of them. And you're actually also, Sally, working with two young people in the roles of Cinderella and Prince Charming, Melissa Mitchell and Derek Klena.
Yes, and I met them about 3 weeks ago at a photo shoot and fell in love with both of them. And then today I walked into the rehearsal hall and there was Melissa. So,
she is something else. She's an amazing young woman with a gorgeous voice, and he is a handsome young man with a beautiful voice, and they're both such nice people, and what a nice cast.
I know, they're like Barbie and Ken.
Yes, they are.
And Michael, both of them played your club, right?
My nightclub. Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's, Sally. I have a nightclub in Studio City at the famous Vitello's restaurant that is dedicated to presenting the best of Broadway stars and nightclub artists in concert. Eileen has headlined for me there a couple of times.
And I've been there.
Have you?
Yes, a facialist, Anne.
Anne Kelly?
Yeah, Vitello's. A lot of people don't know Vitello's does a great facial. You know, they use the.
Oh my God! And she does it while she's singing, which is so amazing. And her set, actually, with her husband playing and the other musicians behind her, if she does it right, you can eat dinner off your own face when she's finished with her first set. It's really good.
Oh, I love a good setup.
Sally, I want to host you whenever you'd like to come. You may come as my guest. Please, we'd have you on the stage headlining yourself.
Thank you,
how about
Michael.
That?
Now,
absolutely,
Sally. I got to interject something because I, and obviously, we want to talk about Cinderella. We want to talk about Cabrillo Music Theater, but I have to sort of take you back a little bit because I know. I hope you're not completely over talking about All in the Family.
No, I will never be over talking about that
because I am. I mean, to say that I can literally recite every episode. My friend and I do this joke where we try to, this. It's sort of like trivia. We try to trip one another up by throwing someone a setup line, and if you know, you have to get the payoff. But he wanted me to ask, and I was curious as well. It was such a seminal television show. It changed television, and I'm so curious, as someone who was there in the trenches while it was happening, two questions, actually. Did you know, when you were doing it, the effect that you were having on the world at that time? That's A. And B, how do you feel about the fact that because of political correctness, a show that good could not get on television today?
A show that daring would not be on network, it would be on cable.
Exactly.
But there are things much more daring than that on television now, so that would be mild in comparison. But when I first landed the role, there would be no way probably for any of us to have fathomed without a crystal ball that worked how what was going to happen to our lives and to the face of television. When the first one was going to go on the air, we had already made 8 shows. We had 8 in the can when the first one aired, because we started making them in November of 70, and the first one aired mid-January of 71.
Okay.
And that day in the rehearsal hall, our director, John, John Rich, said, okay, now, you know that the first one's on the show, on the air tonight. We said, yeah. He said, you need to know that CBS has manned all these CBS affiliates around the country with extra operators to take all of the angry telephone calls.
Wow.
So tomorrow we will either be out of a job or we will be at the beginning of a phenomenon. So we all came to rehearsal the next day, not having known yet what the overnight ratings were. And John Rich started the morning's rehearsal by saying, well, last night the phones did ring off the hook all over the country at all the affiliates, but they weren't angry phone calls. They were phone calls saying, whoa, whoa, what was that? Is that going to come back again? We get to see that next week?
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
And so it looks like we've got a job for a while. So after it had been on the air for about, I don't know, 6-7 weeks, he sat us down again and he said, it's obvious that all of your lives are going to change, and I just want to forewarn you. The things that you could normally do before and not be noticed, you're going to be noticed now. And I thank God that was back in the day where the paparazzi didn't chase you around town all the time.
Oh, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I heard the same thing from Jean Stapleton. I did a little movie of the week with her called Chance of a Lifetime. I was a wedding photographer at the, and Jean Stapleton was in it. And she said the same thing. She said it got to the point where you couldn't go over to the farmer's market anymore.
Oh, no, that was the first thing that went away. Rob Reiner and I used to walk over there. It wasn't the Grove then. It was just the farmer's market.
Right, right.
And we would go over there on a lunch break and, you know, have different kind of lunch every day. And then came the day where we just couldn't go over there for lunch because it took too long. There were too many people wanting to take pictures with us and talk to us and wanting us to sign things, and we never got lunch. So we realized that our lives had changed.
Wow. Well, I don't want to go too much into it because I know you have a whole lot else going on. But I thank you so much for sharing that, because I'm very, very interested in that whole, you know, episode of television history and what it offered.
Of course, Sally, you went on to have your own CBS series after that, which was named after your character, Gloria, and then went on to recurring roles on CBS with Still Standing and the CW's Gilmore Girls, which you were fabulous
And I did
on.
Another series for Fox called 9 to 5.
Yes, 9 to 5. And you also, I don't know how many people know this about you, but you're the voice of Pebbles Flintstone on the Pebbles and Bam Bam cartoon series. How cool is that?
Yabba dabba doopy.
Thank you.
And you know what I remember you too from, Sally? Because I was a budding magician when I was younger, as every, you know, geek ends up being that winds up on internet radio. I remember that great movie of the week, the Houdinis, the Great Houdinis.
The Great Houdinis.
Yes, and it was just, it was wonderful. I remember that fondly.
Thank you. I was very excited to make that movie with Paul Mako Glaser, and of course I got to work with my idol, Ruth Gordon.
Oh, that's
right. She
played
my mother-in-law in the movie. She played Harry Houdini's mother, and because I got to work with her in that, we became friends for the rest of her life, and she let me live in her brownstone on East 49th Street, New York, when I did my first Broadway show.
Wow.
And my next door neighbors were Katharine Hepburn and Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, so you were slumming it.
You're really? So fancy,
yeah.
Sally. You're
and
just
on
so
the morning
fancy.
Of my birthday, the doorbell rang, and I was in the kitchen on the first floor, and my friend Pamela was up on the third floor with my daughter, and I screamed, Pamela, someone's at the door. She says, well, you're on the first floor. You get it. So I thought, well, it's probably someone with balloons or something for my birthday. And I opened the door, and there's Katharine Hepburn standing there. She said, hello, Sally. Nora, that was our housekeeper that came with the brownstone. Nora told my housekeeper, Mary, that it's your birthday. Happy birthday. And I said, oh, Miss Hepburn, thank you. She says, here, I've made you a card. She handed me a hand-painted birthday card.
Oh,
and
my
went, oh.
Gosh.
Thank you, Miss Hepburn. Have a nice day.
Katharine Hepburn brought you a hand-painted birthday card. Okay, you just eclipsed All in the Family for me.
That is amazing. Now, was that when you were on Broadway with Rita Moreno in your first Broadway show? Was it
Jimmy Coco and Rita Moreno, and I did a three-character comedy called Wally's Cafe.
Right, right. And that was followed up thereafter in Neil Simon's The Odd Couple, I think you did with Brenda Vaccaro, am I right?
Right, right.
And who were
darling Brenda Vaccaro? Did you see Brenda Vaccaro's movie that was out last month or 2 months ago with Al Pacino called about the doctor Kevorkian?
You don't know Jack.
You don't know Jack. Thank you.
She was.
Thank you, Eileen. Yeah, wasn't that a great movie?
It was a great movie. Al Pacino was eerily perfect, I thought, as Kevorkian.
And Brenda Vaccaro playing his sister was just the icing on the cake. She's so amazing. She's been my dear friend for so many years, and she doesn't work enough. And to see her in that, I went, oh, please let this be a resurgence for your career.
Yeah. And this is on HBO now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because I saw the teasers for it. CBS News Sunday Morning did a piece on Pacino where they featured that. But I guess it's still so we can spread the word that people, it's probably, well, they rerun stuff. So
yeah,
we'll see.
And it might very well be on demand. You never quite know.
Oh, that's true.
It might be.
So, Michael?
Yes. Well, you know, I think we should talk a little bit here about what Sally's doing now in Cinderella and this wonderful production of it. And this is, of course, ladies and gentlemen who are out there in our listening audience, this is the Rodgers and Hammerstein version that came from television originally with Julie Andrews back, I think, in 1957. And it was followed shortly thereafter with Leslie Ann Warren playing Cinderella. And it's a very special, beautiful, beautiful production that is coming out to Cabrillo Music Theater at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza, and it opens July 23rd. And Sally, you are in rehearsal with this wonderful, wonderful show, and I understand that the special effects on this show, I don't know whether you've been told of them yet, but I understand from Lewis that they're going to be rather spectacular.
Well, he just said that in the rehearsal hall because we're blocking the scene where a lot of the special effects happen. And he keeps saying, at this moment, this is going to happen. And I just stand there with my mouth agape thinking, how are they going to do that? But then you having done magic, I guess it's going to be magic.
Absolutely. And for the kids alone, I mean, this is not a children's show. This is a family show. So everyone's going to enjoy that. But that's awesome
because I'm a pessimist, most Scandinavians are, and that's not waiting to happen. I mean, it's like something's supposed to light up here, spin around there, and I think what's going to happen is I'm going to wind up on the floor with a broken leg.
I didn't know that. First of all, I don't know if I could say that. A Scandinavian pessimist, I tell you, that's a mouthful to get out.
That's redundant. Ingmar Bergman, all his films are so dark.
Oh, yeah, there you go. He's pretty much the yardstick for pessimism, isn't he?
Yeah.
Sally, did you have a... we were all, right before you came on, as we were waiting for you to come to the line, we were all talking about how we spent the 4th of July. Did you happen to spend... were you able to relax and have a little nice afternoon yesterday?
I didn't get out of bed until 11 o'clock.
God bless you.
Because I think I'm still on Pittsburgh time, and I've got all messed up. I just did a musical in Pittsburgh called Curtains.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I bet you were wonderful.
Thanks, Eileen. Yeah, I got to play the producer of the show within the show.
Oh.
I got to play Carmen Bernstein.
It's an adorable show, Curtains. It was real. I saw it on Broadway, and it was just a delight from beginning to end.
What is
David Hyde Pierce won a Tony for it.
Yes, he did.
Oh, that's the show. Is it like a murder mystery?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it's a murder mystery, a show within a show, and Malcolm Getz was our lead.
Oh wonderful.
Yay.
He's wonderful. That show actually started in Los Angeles, didn't it? And then it went to Broadway, perhaps down at La Jolla?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, down at the La Jolla Playhouse. And
anyway,
so,
on the 4th of July, yeah. I stayed in bed with my two Scotty dogs until they couldn't stand it anymore, and they made me get up.
And that was around 1 o'clock.
Yeah. And then mid-afternoon, I said to one of the kids in the house, I said, Alexandra, would you like to see a movie today? And she said, yes. So we went through the movie section of the L.A. Times, and she had seen 98% of the film. The only thing she hadn't seen that I knew I wanted to see was The Karate Kid.
Uh-huh.
And I said, let's go down to the Grove and go see The Karate Kid. She said, really? And I said, you're going to love it. The Jaden Smith, the Will Smith son,
yes.
I hear is brilliant in it, and Jackie Chan is going to be the best role he ever did in his life, and it turned out to be true. He broke my heart in the movie. I sat there with crocodile tears running down my face during the movie, because of Jackie Chan's performance.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a must-see.
Amazing.
I think it's on my list, and I'm glad to hear that you liked it as well.
And that's really saying something, because you wouldn't expect Jackie Chan to really elicit that. You know, he's sort of kind of locked into that whole sort of goofy action thing. So it's nice to hear that.
So not goofy in this. He was heartbreaking.
Oh, beautiful.
And then when we walk out of the movie, there's all those little, you know, kiosks, all those little...
Oh, the little kiosks
wagons,
there around, yeah.
They sell things, and my sunglasses had broken, so they were selling two pair for $20. So
oh,
Alex and I got some sunglasses.
That's a deal.
And then,
I bought sunglasses there. I know exactly the kiosk you're talking about.
You know, when you get a pair of sunglasses for $10, if you sit on them tomorrow, you don't feel badly.
Well, that's just it. Well, the same reason I go to Venice Beach. And the thing is, when you have a, well, let me phrase it delicately. When you have a nose like I do, it's difficult to find the proper eyewear because it's got to sort of offset the proboscis endowment. You know what I mean?
Yes, and when you have a round face like I do, you got to have glasses that are so big it makes your face look little.
You know, and this is funny, we're bringing this up about the sunglasses because Paul Strohle, Sally, he was a strapping man, and he rode here today for the first time that I've seen him on his motorcycle. Now, that's not something he does. He has a nice sedan, and he and his lovely 4 foot tall wife.
Why do you keep making her shorter than she is?
5 feet. She's 5 feet.
But earlier in the hour, she was 3.5 feet. What are you talking about?
You know.
She's growing.
She's growing.
I'm 5 feet tall.
And well, you're lovely, as is my wife.
And Michael, from down here, I can see right up your nose.
well, sadly, that's all you can see.
Sadly, you can see up my nose from Santa Monica.
Well, here's the interesting thing about noses. We have to thank God every day when we pray that he set them on our faces the way they're set, because if they were the other way around, we would drown when it rained.
Some of us faster than others.
But I was leading to one little thing that was kind of cute that Paul Strohle did today, Sally and Eileen.
On his motorcycle?
On his motorcycle. Well, not on his motorcycle. He actually got off his motorcycle and took off this enormous helmet and the sunglasses. So this is what made me think of this. And it was suddenly became all about Paul's hair.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. When you wear a helmet on the motorcycle, and especially I had like 4 or 5 stops today, and then taking it off and putting it on and taking it off, but you get this, you cultivate this look that my wife and I have now called the Connecticut lesbian. So when you have gray hair,
which
like
would be different from the California lesbian, in what way?
Oh, well, the
not much.
Well, about half a can of Aquanet. That's the difference. About half a can of Aquanet and usually a sweater with a reindeer on it.
And that's on a good day.
And Birkenstocks and a plaid shirt.
Hey, comfortable shoes.
Yeah.
Sally, before we don't have much more time, but one of the things I wanted to really call attention to, because you have worked tirelessly at this for 30 years or more, and your humanitarian work is really inspiring. And I remember when you first started to do it, and you really were making those efforts well before it was fashionable to do so. You're one of the first celebrities that I know that really put their face on a cause to feed children and that. And I really do think you need to be applauded for that, and I think we should all be very, very grateful for your efforts.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you very much. It was 3 decades of very tough but rewarding work. And if it's a remote and shoddy outpost, I've been there. And if it's hot and humid and flies everywhere, I've been there. When I went to Italy 10 years ago, I didn't know what to do because nobody there needed to be fed. I've seen it. I've seen all the starving kids, and I've seen the squalor that they live in. And believe me, it takes years off your psyche to witness all that. But wow. I also know that all of the people in the world that become sponsors are helping, and we have rendered ourselves obsolete in a lot of these areas and can move on because they no longer are uneducated and therefore living in poverty. Mm. Education is the answer to everything.
Well, God bless you for that, Sally, really. And thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. And I just want to tell people about how they can come and see you. And once again, July 23rd, Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella opens at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. Tickets are on sale now.
And that first weekend, there's a show on Friday, which is the 23rd, 2 on Saturday, and 1 on Sunday.
Yes.
And then the next weekend, we start a day earlier. There's a show on Thursday, Friday, 2 Saturday, 1 Sunday.
You know your stuff. That's fantastic. And for tickets and theater information, call 805 area code 449-2787. That's 449-ARTS, A-R-T-S, starring Sally Struthers as the fairy godmother, Marcia Wallace as the wicked stepmother, and LA's Next Great Stage Dive finalist, Melissa Mitchell as Cinderella, and Derek Klena as Prince Charming. Sally, thank you so much. Eileen, you want to say goodbye to Sally?
Bye, Sally. Say hi to Marcia and Derek and Lewis for me.
I will. Goodbye, darling.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Sally.
I love you so. And Paul and Michael. And yes. Michael, leave him alone about his wife. I'm 5 feet two. There's nothing you can do about it.
I'm coming out to see you on this show. We'll talk.
We are very, very grateful.
My dresses are hemmed to the floor, and I am wearing 3-inch platforms. So, okay. So I'm going to give you the illusion of being much taller.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you, Sally.
Bye-bye.
Bye, now. Guys.
Bye-bye. Oh, what a pleasure that was.
Delightful. Delightful lady. And Lewis will be happy because we got her back into rehearsal on time.
Yes,
right?
We did. Exactly. Yes,
at 4:30. I swore on my life last night that would happen. Paul, we need to take just a little moment and pay attention to some other great shows that are in town right now.
Yes, we do.
Lovely sponsor, Breakdown Services.
Yeah, Breakdown Services Limited is a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. We are very grateful to have such a distinguishing sponsor as Breakdown Services.
Indeed we are. And our weekly live arts calendar for this week of July 5th, the 14th annual Kingsman Shakespeare Festival kicked off performances of The Comedy of Errors and The Winter's Tale over the holiday weekend at California's Lutheran University in Thousand Oaks. The festival's schedule continues through August 8th.
Act Out Mystery Theater, the same company that brought you Terminate Her and All Aboard for Murder, presents Die Nasty. Well, at least they're, you know, expanding their repertoire. Die Nasty, now through July 17th at the Reef on the Water in Long Beach, California. The Act Out company specializes in an interactive evening of live theater with comedy improvisation by professional actors and audience members.
Step into the world of Shen Yun, a world of beauty, majesty, and enchantment, on stage now through July 11th in the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion at the Music Center of Los Angeles. Combining Chinese legends of virtue and modern tales of courage with dance and music, Shen Yun promises an unforgettable visual theatrical experience.
Marking 10 years with conductor Grant Gershon, the Los Angeles Master Chorale launches its classical season with settings of The Gloria by both Vivaldi and Poulenc, plus the Hallelujah Chorus, complete with fireworks. This one-night-only event, titled A Glorious Celebration, will be presented tomorrow, Tuesday, July 6th, at the legendary Hollywood Bowl.
Taiko Project marks 10 years of creating their own brand of Japanese drumming, spiking tradition with rock, hip-hop, and theater influences. Taiko has performed at the Academy Awards, appeared in commercials for Nike and Mitsubishi, and recorded for Kanye West. Don't miss them July 10th and July 11th at the Ford Amphitheater in the Hollywood Hills.
Priscilla's Perfect Day, a new family musical about an 11-year-old budding artist named Priscilla Penelope Periwinkle, is on stage each Saturday at the Lonnie Chapman Theater in the NoHo Arts District of North Hollywood, California, through July 17th. A pancake party and activities follow the performance. That sounds very cute.
I would go for the pancakes alone. But it's a morning thing with the kids, and it's a must-see, this little
show. There aren't a lot of offerings for kids at that time. That's great.
And so for further information, ladies and gentlemen, about any productions or events mentioned on today's State of the Arts Live calendar, visit us during the week ahead at stateoftheartsla.com for all details. Now, Paul, we're going to go to do a review together of something that we saw this past week.
And it won't just be the two of us either, because we found out before the show that Eileen, our in-studio guest here, also saw In the Heights, which is what we are reviewing, and we're anxious to hear her. You didn't know you'd be reviewing a show today, did you?
You know, in my business, you do whatever the next thing is. If it's a review, it's a review.
Well, I hope you felt like we did. I was totally in awe of this production here in Los Angeles at the beautiful Pantages Theater. And it, to me, it was like a Broadway show that shouldn't exist. It wasn't a spectacle like Wicked or Phantom of the Opera, but it is indeed one of the most pure and perfect shows to come out of Broadway in years, in my opinion.
Well, it was, but that being said, it was pretty spectacular. Of course, it didn't have the pyrotechnics and all that
right.
of Wicked.
Right, well, that's
what
I mean.
It was a beautiful presentation. The set was fantastic with that bridge in the back. It was just really...
And the use of one set for an entire show, as cleverly as they were using it and keeping it alive somehow, some way, whether it was somebody sitting in a window, having a beer, watching television, and or There were candles going in other apartment windows. It was just, it was alive. That set was alive at all times.
Right. And the way they were able to facilitate all those different levels with the people dancing and singing in the different windows, and it was, you know, sort of like this musical Rear Window.
Exactly. And, you know, well earning its 4 Tony Awards, including Best Musical of 2008, it is a variety of music and dance styles that are seamlessly incorporated, into the show and its underlying message about relationships, family, and community. With the best thing for me was without one ounce of cynicism, really. And, you know, the heart of this show just basically, for me, was pumping a pulsating score, and a simple storyline at that, but it conveying the hope of these three generations of Latinos, Latino immigrants, as they struggle to forge, you know, an identity in a neighborhood that's in transition. So I was totally, totally blown away by the performances of especially Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote this, conceived this, wrote the music, wrote the lyrics, and impeccably directed by Thomas Kail, with a book by 2-time Pulitzer Prize winner, by the way, P.S. Finalist, not winner, forgive me, a finalist, Chiara Alegria.
Oh, he's only a finalist?
That's yes.
He's only a finalist?
You know, but written with such passion and conviction and authenticity, it was extraordinary, really. Lighting, superb musical arrangements, orchestrations, full of life, richer than rich performances, as I said, by Lynn. For me, Sean Taylor Corbett, the young man that plays the little kind of smart mouth street bully, but in a most endearing way. Isabel Santiago, the head trio of women in the beauty shop, amazing. Danny Bolero, the always wonderful Danny Bolero, and Natalie Toro. And on and on. I mean, exquisite ensemble, with a shout out to Joseph Morales and Kevin Santos and my longtime friend Jeffrey Seller for producing yet another amazing gift for the theater. So,
Eileen, now you saw it in New York. Did you see it early in its run? So, I mean, was all of this energy already attached to it when you saw it, or did you really, were you able to sort of get a perspective on it without the hype, or was it too late at that point?
We saw it fairly early on in the run, and we're looking forward to it tremendously. But I had no idea I was going to love it as much as I did. I thought the entire concept of the show was beautiful. I thought that the choreography was so state-of-the-art, and that they managed to bring certain elements of musical theater into the present. Mm-hmm. You know, we complain all the time, musicals are old, musicals are tired, or musicals are so far out and wacky that we can't get our hearts around them. Mm-hmm. And I thought what Lin-Manuel Miranda did, and you know, he worked on this project from when he was in college. This was a college project. Yeah. I mean, boy, when I think of some of the papers I wrote in college, they didn't become Broadway shows. But it was worked on with such care and craftsmanship and heart. And when you can have the combination of craft and art and heart, then you've really got a winner. And I was lucky enough to go backstage after we saw the show. Priscilla Lopez played the mom, the owner
Natalie
of the
Toro,
Natalie's
right.
part. And Priscilla and I have known each other forever and ever and ever. And so we went backstage to see her, and along climbing the stairs to her dressing room, there he was. There was Lin-Manuel Miranda, who made my day, because when he saw me, he went, "Oh my God, it's the mom from Mr. Belvedere," and gave me the hugest hug and kiss. And I was, you know, my heart was pounding because I love the show so much. And I said, you know, I don't know how many people have told you this. I said, but this reminded me of Fiddler on the Roof. And he said, well, that was always in the back of his mind when they were working on this, is the universality of the Fiddler on the Roof experience, that it could be the longest running show in Japan and has played every ethnic group and we all relate to it. And he said, in his mind, it was always there to keep the story true to the truth and the truths of all of these characters, while bringing such high energy music and putting in a couple of more traditional musical theater right. ballads in there exactly. so that, you know, when kids come and audition for stuff, they've got some new songs to sing.
Right.
And but I got a shout out to that choreography where when you were talking about the set and how we focused on different parts of the right. set at different times. All of those moves were choreographed, so that if you were looking up at a window, it's because somebody was lifting a cup of coffee in time to the music, and you don't even realize it's going on. So I thought it was a stunning, beautiful show.
You know, I think Paul and his wife and my guest and myself, after we were standing out actually on the boulevard there talking about it, and we both kind of said to each other, we felt that it was like being... what it must have been like to be on Broadway seeing the opening of West Side Story, that kind of excitement and energy, not comparing the show to that, but in that realm of importance
right.
and energy and something that's going to be around for a very long time.
Like West Side or like Fiddler, where it's sort of, you know, you're witnessing an iconic piece of theater that
absolutely.
Is going to be timeless, and you know it's going to be timeless when you're seeing it.
Absolutely.
I never thought about the Fiddler comparison, but that is really astute, because, I mean, if you think about the, you know, you have the family issues, the tradition of different families, that's a universal theme.
It
doesn't matter if it's in Soviet, you know, Russia or here. It's just, you know, the father trying to impose a sort of, you know, set of, you know, mores or whatever on the children and trying to break free of that and be your own person. They're universal themes, and they're executed so well. And the other thing that you mentioned, Eileen, which I think is very valid, I haven't attended a musical. I see as much theater as I can. I don't see a lot of musicals. And I can't remember the last time I was in a theater at a musical and I was surrounded. I mean, I'm 45 years old. I was surrounded by people who were half my age. Younger than me, mm-hmm. and I was surrounded and 20 years old. You know, there were like teenage girls behind me. There was a couple of younger men to my right, where my wife and I were sitting, and it was just like this is the future. This is what we need. We have to infuse this into, you know, into the theater and get them to attend.
Absolutely, know? And you know, I think we can all safely say, run, don't walk to the heights. Get it while it's hot and on fire at the Pantages Theater or a theater near you during the continuation of its national tour, which I know goes from Los Angeles to San Diego to Orange County and actually Japan after that.
There you go.
There you go. You didn't know that. You didn't see our promotional material, so you didn't know you
were.
And
then it returns back to the States, but with performances here in Los Angeles, however, at the Pantages through July 25th. Tickets for In the Heights are available now online at BroadwayLA.org or by phone, Paul, at...
You're going to have to give them
800-982-2787.
I'm reading all about Eileen. I'm reading all about Eileen.
Again, that's 1-800-982-2787, and tickets may be purchased in person at the Pantages box office and, of course, all Ticketmaster outlets. Don't waste your time. As I said, run. Don't walk to the heights. And now we're going to turn it over to the woman who's been patiently putting up with our
Eileen,
folderol
who's
here.
Been with us here very, very patiently. Eileen, you have a show coming up that is, there are not going to be a lot of opportunities to see it. It's only how many, just a very few performances.
Three performances.
Three Songs from the Heart. It debuts Friday, July 16th. It's presented by the Festival of New American Musicals 2010 at the Electric Lodge Scott Kelman Theater in Venice, California. Tell us about what that is like. I want to read this description because it sounds hysterical, but tell us about
it. I don't know how hysterical it is. It's three performances, first of all, because it's part of this festival, and every year there's this festival of new musicals we all need a place to develop new product, you know, whether it's developing it from college on out or whatever. So the festival gives creators a way and a place to see where they're at with their shows. So we've been rehearsing for on and off a little bit for a couple of weeks, and we'll get much more intensively into it as we come closer to opening for three performances. And at the end of those three performances, I think the Frederick Keeve, who's the writer, Lance Roberts, who's the director, will have a much better idea of where this show fits in the commercial musical theater world. And it's a fascinating process to be in on a show from the beginning and see how it changes. And it's great to be able to have input. You know, when you're working on something from the beginning, you can say, you know, can I have a line here that means this? And can I cut this part of my song, and maybe we can put this over here or do this over
Sure, hone it. Yeah, just to polish it. Yeah.
And it's fun.
You've got some wonderful people working with you. I see Marcus Choi from Wicked is in your cast, and also Joe Donahue from Rent, and Zara Mahler, who is a favorite of mine just from seeing her in theater here in Los
Angeles. Well, I had never met Zara before, and I think she's just terrific. And then I started doing some reading about her. She's had some great successes in theater in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And she's got such a wonderful voice. She has a non-musical theater voice.
Exactly.
Which is what I just love about her voice. She's got a really unique kind of pop, almost folk. I don't know what kind of sound it is, but it's... And she's a very accomplished and wonderful actress. And Marcus and I are sort of like sidekicks in the show. I play a talk show host. And I'm taking a little bit from everybody. There's a little Oprah, there's a little Kathy Lee, there's a little Martha Stewart, there's a little Rachel, there's a little Jerry Springer. I'm synthesizing all of them and trying to channel everybody, and Marcus plays my producer, and I drive him crazy because I won't follow the script.
Well, you know what, I adore Marcus Choi, but you give him a big hello for me, please, Eileen, and tell him he owes me a date at Sterling's because he booked it, and then he went and did Wicked again in San Francisco.
He's just too
He's a busy man.
He's
man.
Terrific.
I didn't realize that I could advise you on this, Eileen, because I was I saw that it was about a talk show. So for me, for my mind, I immediately imagined that it would be maybe funnier than it might be. I don't know. But I spent 2 years warming up the studio audience for the Jenny Jones show in Chicago.
And Jenny Jones was way front in my mind.
Oh,
in
okay.
Thinking about,
yeah,
thinking
no,
I was
the one who went out and sort of whipped the crowd into a frenzy before the camera started rolling. I did that in Chicago for a couple of years. So it's a very unique world to be part of. It's a very unusual type of entertainment. So
I would love to talk to you about that someday. And you know who's playing our warm-up guy is Mark Kopaj, who played Diane Carroll's son on Julia.
Oh,
do you remember
series? Oh yeah.
So
no.
Mark was the little boy. He's all grown up, and in our show, Three's Songs from the Heart, he plays my warm up guy.
Oh wow.
And he's wonderful. What a nice guy.
So I guess I must have not gotten the message for that audition.
It's okay. You're busy.
It's all right.
We're going to take care of that soon, though, Paul. But you know, we have just a few minutes left with Eileen, and we need to talk about her wonderful history in the theater, and because everyone knows her, of course, from the fabulous long-running ABC comedy Mr. Belvedere, in which she played Marcia Owens, the mother of the Klan there. And Eileen, you started on Broadway. It's really where you started. You started in tell us about that. Promises, Promises.
Yeah,
my
first Broadway show was Promises, Promises, which is currently enjoying a revival on Broadway right now. And that was a great job for a kid right out of college. I understudied the leading lady, and I sang backups from the orchestra pit, and I got to go on, I think, 10 times the first year I was there, and then I got the role and did the part in the national tour for almost another year. So
awesome.
That was
it's a great show. Yeah. And then you went on to play Sandy for 2 years in the Broadway production of Grease.
Yeah, like I say, the original production, Broadway production of Grease. I wasn't the first Sandy. I was the second Sandy, which still gives me a little cred, I think, in the Sandy world.
She's very hip with the lingo. Very hip. A little
She's
cred.
Very hip with the lingo.
Can you precede cred with Sandy? I am Sandy cred. I had that once too, and a little penicillin cleared it right up.
Cleared it right up, and it's fat. There was just a big Grease sing-along at the Hollywood Bowl.
They showed
the movie, and a lot of our, a lot of people that went through the show did the movie. So we always, it's a wonderful big family, the Grease family. I was there for 2.5 years, but throughout just our years of Grease, there were over 400 people in the show. And there's a whole bunch of us that are still very close.
And you met your husband.
Yeah,
he was during the show. He was in the pit.
He was in the pit. He was conducting and
wonderful
playing
Ben.
The piano. Ben Lanzaroni. Yeah.
Wonderful Ben.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was going to say there's so many other things, and we don't have enough time.
There are, but I want to call attention to, before we forget it, so we don't get cut
off,
to check out Eileen's website. It's eileengraff.com. That's ILENEGRAFF.com. And another thing I think you should check out, I'm sure it's available Amazon, because I think it's a great idea.
Oh, yes.
The 2003 Grammy-nominated CD that she was part of, Baby's Broadway Lullabies, a collection of beautiful theater songs arranged especially for kids, and that's available on the website. And I think it's a great idea to have something that's, you know, got some weight to it for kids, not just silly, insipid little songs, but something that they will really remember. And, you know, if they're Broadway tunes, I know you're in favor.
Oh, right? I'm totally. I mean, you know, and bringing kids up on Broadway, what could be better than that, right?
In my opinion, I think it's a good
idea.
And
the way that you do them, honestly, the way that she does them. And one thing before we go, because we have an extra little minute here. If you haven't seen enough of this woman, who's a wonderfully gifted actress, you should get the DVD of Disney's South Pacific and watch her performance opposite Glenn Close and Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, that's right.
It's a beautiful, beautiful performance, and it's a beautiful production.
Thank
actually.
You. Yeah, it was a gorgeous
production.
One of
my favorite things. You must have had a blast.
We had the most fun. Sometimes I sit around and say, did I really get a chance to spend a summer in Australia with Glenn Close and Harry Connick Jr. doing Rodgers and Hammerstein? Give me a break. It was fabulous.
Well, Eileen, thank you very much for joining us. What a pleasure. You're
thanks,
such a
gentlemen.
Class act, and it's always you're welcome anytime.
Okay. Very grateful to have you on, and just want to let you all know what's happening next Monday, July 12th. We're featuring actors that have expanded their talents beyond performing. We have Ovation-nominated actress and successful business entrepreneur Sissy Connor of Bare Soul Designer Footwear.
Yes, and actor Blair Hickey, one of the creators of castingabout.com, which is a division of Breakdown Services.
And we are very, very grateful. Thank you, Eileen, and we will see you all next week.
Indeed.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk.